This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. Whether it's misinformation memes telling us to beware of 5G or news headlines that make the technology sound ominous with air travel, chances are you may have heard something about it. I personally think of cell phones because that's where I've seen most of it advertised. But is it just about cell phones? What other uses does it have? Well, today we're going to spend the hour learning more about the ways we communicate through technology and how 5G innovation fits in. With us now to give us a bit of a masterclass, I'd say, on this topic are Meng Cheng, Executive Vice President of Purdue University and Dean of the College of Engineering, and Nick Landeman, Director of SpectrumX and Co-Director of the Wireless Institute. He's also a Professor of Electrical Engineering at the University of Notre Dame. Thank you to both of you for joining us.
Thank you, Miriam. Great to be here.
My pleasure.
Meng, I'll start with you. I want to start from the beginning here before we get into 5G. Where did all of this technology originate from? Maybe that's just too broad of a question, but how did this all start?
Well, thank you, first of all, Miriam, for inviting Nick and I to be here. And great to be on WFYI. Now, I maybe can go back to 1G, right? Well, I started 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 this way. And back then, people just thought that, hey, it would be great to have this so-called cellular architecture that will allow us to have connectivity on the go. It was mostly analog. And then second generation, it became very much digital. And third generation, you can now do emails and a bit of web browsing. And 4G LTE became the standard for our phone-oriented lifestyle. And I think 5G, you know, Maria, I'll see if Nick agrees with me on this or not. 5G is going to be the first generation of wireless cellular technology that will allow us to think much broader than Netflix streaming, much broader than mobile consumer activities, but go all the way to private enterprise networks, industrial networks, and to machine communications.
Okay, machine communications has me thinking some sci-fi thoughts, but I want to ask Nick what your thoughts are on what Meng just said.
I agree. 5G in many ways has been inspired by all the success of 4G. And not only is it focused on enhancing what they call the mobile broadband experience that we enjoy on our smartphones and potentially with augmented reality headsets and so on, but there's other critical application areas like massive Internet of Things applications. So many, many sensors connected up to the cellular network. Of course, also autonomous vehicles. These sorts of large number of machine type devices will put tremendous pressure on these networks. And so they needed to be redesigned in order to support that set of applications. The other one, the other key feature in 5G, again, going beyond what we tend to think of as an evolution of our smartphone experience, is really, really reduced latency. So very responsive, quick turnaround times, very reliable communications in order to support mission critical applications, safety applications, manufacturing applications, and so on. So there's a whole new class or several new classes of applications that are envisioned for these 5G networks, which is really exciting.
And so for 5G networks, is it that now when we use devices that are on these on 5G, it's more instantaneous, like if we're loading a page on our phone and trying to search the web?
Well, I'll say that, Miriam, as Nick said, yes, it will make your downloading and streaming even faster. And don't get us wrong, that will be very, very useful. But it's more than that, because as Nick mentioned, it's going to be about the Internet of Things. So imagine your autonomous vehicle. Imagine a factory manufacturing floor here, let's say, in our home state of Indiana. You are moving physical objects around. So the latency, the responsiveness needs to be really good, because otherwise it's not just glitching one picture on your downloading. It is going to be disrupting physical objects, and they could be dangerous if they're not properly controlled. So when the bytes meet the atoms, right, when the virtual meets the physical side of the network, then you need the responsiveness to be extremely good, not just how fast you can download the throughput, but how quickly can you react
That's really cool. That's it's kind of like all the companies that are now starting to do more robotic type work. You know, instead of having a person, they're having, let's say, a machine moving boxes in a warehouse. This technology would help with that.
Yeah, just to contrast, you know, if you're streaming a video service on your phone, periodically, depending upon where you're located, you'll see it, you know, there'll be a little circular spinning behavior where it's basically trying to wait until it gets enough data. It's buffering data in order to play the video stream. You know, that's acceptable for in terms of a user experience. Of course, you try not to experience that. You try to minimize that, but it's not a safety issue if your video feed has to get buffered once in a while. Right? So that sort of functionality isn't adequate when you're trying to control a bunch of robots in a manufacturing floor, or if you're trying to do remote surgery. You know, so these are some of the applications that people are talking about, and you can't afford to have to buffer your transmission of data in those cases. And that's where some of the, it's called ultra reliable, low latency features in 5G.
That's really interesting. I'm just taking this all in, and just trying to think of how it would impact us regular folks who aren't in the tech sector. So, Meng, can you explain to those of us who are not engineers how this technology fits into our day-to-day lives, aside from some of the applications you mentioned, but, you know, someone who's just going about their day that may not be using the technology in the ways that you mentioned?
Sure. You know, one example would be AR, VR, augmented reality and virtual reality. Now, we may think, well, AR, VR, that's for online gamers. I'm not going to use that. Well, it's also useful for automation. It's useful for education. It's useful for telemedicine. It is not in prevalent use just yet because we've been focusing over the past four generations, whether it's analog, digital, faster speed, more internet-oriented, mostly we've been focusing on throughput. You know, what is the megabits per second, the gigabit per second that you can get, rather than how fast can you respond? So back to the point that Nick just mentioned, imagine that you want to participate in a telemedicine world and you are going to have some AR, VR helping you and your doctors. In that case, you need responsiveness to be extremely fast, as well as the throughput to be very high to sustain the large volume of data needed for rendering. So you're going to need both. You need high throughput. You need fast responsiveness. Now, some of the 5G deployment, let's say in downtown Indianapolis, we actually have a downtown Indy 5G zone together with IEDC, Indiana Economic Development Corporation, and the 912 Institute, whereby we support many different companies and app providers. Some of them are doing very cool cryptocurrency, quantum computation, and also AR/VR applications. And they are seeing the benefits of 5G deployment that can make them go faster and respond faster.
Nick, is this a necessity, or is this more of we can do this, so we will?
Well, that's always the give and take here. So each generation of this technology, people start to push it in new directions. They envision new applications. For example, as Meng mentioned, the augmented reality, virtual reality, that the hardware is there. You know, the people are starting to build these headsets to give you this immersion, but the networks can't support that application today as much as we might like. And so what happens is the cellular industry, the folks that are designing the next generation of technology, they set new levels of standards, specifications for these systems in order to push the technology and justify the investment on the part of the technology developers, but also on the part of the cellular network operators to deploy this new technology. And so there's a lot of give and take there. And I think related to your previous question, I wanted to just add that as those new applications come online in an existing system, they can actually put a pretty significant tax on that system. And so if that system is not designed to support an application, then it could actually potentially affect your day-to-day experience of the system. So if I'm using my phone and all of a sudden a bunch of autonomous vehicles are sharing the same network with me and they have, you know, significant demands on the system, it will degrade my experience as a mobile phone user. And so that's an important thing that's going on behind the scenes, is that the technologies are evolving, and the system has been specifically designed in order to support this growing number of more data intensive and more responsive applications that people are pursuing.
And Mariam, if I could also just echo what Nick said, that part of that is supporting the existing ongoing applications, some of which are consumer-oriented that you and I can directly use, and others are more industrial-oriented that we can indirectly benefit from. But then there's the flip side, which is what some call the philosophy of build it and they'll come. Well, I do believe in this case, build it and they will come. As we have seen throughout the evolution of the internet and five generations of wireless cellular technologies, that there's no limitation to the creativity and the ingenuity of app developers. And there's no limit as to the need for human beings and societal organizations. So I believe that if the infrastructure can deliver certain speed and responsiveness, then the app providers, hopefully they'll all come here to downtown Indianapolis, 5G zone, but all the app providers will see that and be able to create value-generating applications on top of that infrastructure.
We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I do want to talk a little bit more about this build it and they will come. I'm curious about whether this is an infinite technology where it can just keep growing to 6, 7, 8G. I don't know, but maybe we'll find out when we get back. If you have any questions or comments for our guests today, you can find us on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. That's 866-476-3881. I'm Miriam Soeb. We'll be back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Soeb. We're learning the ins and outs of 5G technology, how it affects us, and why there's so much conversation around it. With us are Meng Chang, Executive Vice President of Purdue University and Dean of the College of Engineering, and Nick Lanneman, Director of Spectrum X, Co-Director of the Wireless Institute, and Professor of Electrical Engineering at the University of Notre Dame. Before the break, we were kind of touching upon creating these infrastructures and getting people to come and I guess, invest in the area and bring their stuff here. But Meng, do you think Indiana's prepared for that?
Well, Mariam, let me first address the question you asked before the break, and that is all these generations, what about 10G at some point? Well, think of a pendulum and think of snow, right? Part of, I think, my answer is that the pendulum does swing back and forth. Like 15 years ago, everybody started saying, everything goes to the cloud, and the edge is going to be a dumb edge. When now, over the past several years, you see the pendulum start to swing back towards the edge compute, and people say, well, maybe the click, the brick trade-off, there is something to be said about moving services and capabilities closer to the end users and things. But also think of the snow. There is something to be said about piling on and on. At some point, people will say it costs money to buy spectrum, it costs money to upgrade equipment, and it costs us money as consumers to buy new end-user devices. So when will this stop? When you shuffle the snow, right, you look at layer after layer, if it's too many layers, say, wow, this is too much. Well, I think there is a case to be made that the spectrum might be dynamically shared and the infrastructure might be sliced and shared so that each operator, whether it's a cloud provider, a telco company, can save a little bit as they keep piling on new generations. Now, as to whether Indiana is ready, I think the answer is absolutely yes. For one, Indiana has a deregulated small cell deployment environment. Part of the trend of edge compute is to get the cell towers closer to the end users, but transmitting with much less power as well. And some cities around the country, it takes so much money and time to get a permit. That's not the case here in Indiana. And furthermore, we've got great universities and entrepreneurs, including those at Notre Dame and Purdue, for example, that can innovate on spectrum, on infrastructure, and to attract application. That's the key. If we can attract more application providers to come right on our 5G waves in Indiana, then we have a very strong case.
Nick, I'm curious your thoughts.
Yeah, I would echo a lot of what Meng said. I think Indiana is very well positioned. We've got some leading universities. He mentioned Notre Dame and Purdue, and IU is also heavily involved in exploring this space. We've got Crane Naval Base and a number of defense contractors out in Fort Wayne, Indiana. South Bend is a manufacturing hub, and it has only barely started to touch utilizing 5G and related technologies for manufacturing processes here. Meng has mentioned the Indiana 5G zone in Indianapolis. There's also the Wabash Heartland Innovation Network, which is all focused on making intelligent, smart agriculture and rural broadband. There's tremendous opportunity in our state, which is really exciting.
I do want to ask you, Nick, about the way 5G is covered in popular media. Is it oversimplified? Is there something missing for audiences to understand it better?
Well, I think you're starting to get the sense that it's actually a really complicated set of things. I like to think of it as being six key aspects of a system. There are performance targets that are set at the international level to call something the fifth generation, for example. Then there are standards that specify how do you build a 5G system so that a base station from company A can interact with a smartphone from company B. Then there's the radio spectrum, which is the sort of the natural resource that enables wireless communication. And each country allocates spectrum for 5G in different bands and at different times over different, scales. There's the products, there's the services, there's the applications. So 5G means a lot of things. And so one thing I noticed in the popular media is that it tends to get oversimplified in order to get a quick soundbite or a quick story out. And sometimes it takes a little bit more nuance to understand what some of the subtleties are.
Yeah, I think I'm just now getting it when you just said fifth generation. Is that what 5G stands for?
Yes.
And it's interesting because in my head, I've been thinking that these are some kind of new technology every time. It's like the 1G, then they made up something new and it's now 2G. I didn't realize these are just generations maybe it's different iterations of the same thing. Is that fair to say?
There are pretty significant shifts in the technology across generations. Ironically enough, the fifth generation technology is being specified by an organization called the Third Generation Partnership Project. So some of the naming is perhaps not that forward looking, but the idea has traditionally been, and I would say for the last several major generations, there's a notion of releases in this standards body. And within each release, you will see feature enhancements of one or more of the underlying technology generations. So from 3G to 4G, there was a very significant change in the way that the radio signals were modulated and encoded and transmitted. There's less of a dramatic shift from 4G to 5G in terms of the what we call the physical layer, the format of the signals. That's pretty common, but there's some changes there. There's also some significant changes in the core network. And so it's really just a question of where the big what we call features are added in the system as it evolves over time.
If you're listening to the program, we're speaking with Nick Lenneman, Director of SpectrumX, Co-Director of the Wireless Institute and Professor of Electrical Engineering at the University of Notre Dame. And we're also speaking with Meng Chang, Executive Vice President of Purdue University and Dean of the College of Engineering, about 5G technology, how it affects us, and the conversations surrounding it. If you have any questions or comments and want to reach out to our guests, you can reach out to us on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana, or you can leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. Again, that number is 866-476-3881. Meng, you mentioned earlier something about like with the changing technologies, every time something new comes out, then you have to buy new devices and upgrade your equipment. Is that the case with 5G? Do we all have to go now and get phones that are 5G compatible, or can we stick with 3G, 4G?
Yes. Well, Mariam, I'm still on 4G phone, by the way. Sometimes, you know, my family jokes that, hey, you know, you work on 5G, so why don't you use 5G yourself? There are 5G compatible phones out there, you know, Dad. So I said, well, yeah, but, you know, this old iPhone still works, so I'm okay with it. Now, I think that there's always backward compatibility, and every operator would normally support at least one, sometimes two generations back. And this is part of their cost structure, right? That's why maybe sharing spectrum and infrastructure can reduce this accumulation of costs for them. And to consumers, I would say, look, you know, if you do want higher throughput speed and better responsiveness, yes, why not? At some point, your battery is going to die so fast that you have to switch for that reason anyway. But I would say the key really is what new applications can only be supported by 5G. A lot of those are not consumer facing, but there are some. And there is also the societal side of this story. Nick mentioned a wonderful nonprofit initiative here in the heartland, and we're trying to do rural connectivity by using some aspects of 5G technologies. Can we beam in certain spectrum signals so that our farmers and kids in the farmhouses can also do remote learning and enjoy the benefits of high-speed connectivity? What about digital agriculture in our state? You know, at Purdue, we're building a new campus. It's called Discovery Park District, 460 acres right next to West Lafayette Main Campus. And we're turning that into a lab to life. Any companies, innovators can come here and try to find a way to work with the commercial deployment opportunities we're offering here in different use cases. I'm a big believer that let the rubber hit the road, let applications derive values so that enterprises, consumers, and others will find it a motivating reason to purchase new equipment and devices.
Well, speaking of new equipment and devices, Nick, what kind of phone do you use?
Full disclosure, I have an iPhone 12 that supports 5G. Unfortunately, the 5G coverage in South Bend is not what it is in Indianapolis, but nevertheless, I'm doing just fine.
When I've seen like that signal come on my phone when it says 5G, does that mean I'm on this 5G network that's somewhere out there?
Yes. Well, typically, assuming that the carrier and the phone manufacturer is using the right characterization. Sometimes there's little wrinkles here and there. The marketing folks can get a little generous. In the early days, they were being a little bit generous with the 5G moniker on at least one or two phone models. But I think that's dialed in now.
Is using 5G more expensive in the long run? Every time when these things are updated, does it cost us more? Obviously, we have to update our equipment, but are there any other costs that we have to carry over?
Costs for whom? For consumers? For the carriers?
I would say probably for both, like on different sides of this.
The way I like to think of this is that by monetizing, so the carriers make significant investments in radio spectrum and in network infrastructure, and of course in their workforce to provide these services. But as use grows and as the numbers of applications grow, they get an economy of scale. And you know, my phone bill has been pretty constant for some years now in terms of my cost at the end of the day. But the feature sets, the performance of the phone, I have upgraded the phone periodically, and that's an investment that I've made and I've chosen to make. But in terms of the monthly service fee, it's been about the same. It's pretty remarkable.
Right. So on this note, you know, I think that here in the United States, in most cases, the consumers pay a fixed fee. But there are also many countries around the world where they pay based on usage. And normally when they go from one to the next generation, the older generation will be put on a flat fee plan, but the new generation will be more usage based. But there are what people call smart data pricing solutions that can help you to reduce the cost to consumers. That is, when you shift over to a new generation and pay as you go in other parts of the world.
On that note, Meng, do you think that we're ahead in the U.S. when it comes to the development of 5G and high-speed networks, or are we behind?
Well, you know, I'll say from an innovation angle, yes. American engineers are still ahead of the rest of the world. Now, I'm a bit biased, but I think so. Now, from a deployment point of view, however, we are behind. We have been behind. We still are behind. Part of that is the spectrum issue. Even when spectrum is allocated and bidded and purchased by telecom operators, they're not allowed to use some of that in some cases. Part of that is the permitting and approval process to deploy smaller cells for 5G. But I'm hopeful that we can pick up the speed and deploy much faster in the coming few years.
Nick, I want to get a little bit of info on spectrum. I know both of you have talked about this a little bit, but for our listeners to understand what you mean when you say that.
Sure. So the way that a signal propagates from your phone to a base station or vice versa is via a propagation mechanism that's generally called electromagnetic waves. And it tends to be, for these systems, it works in a portion of it's called the electromagnetic spectrum. And radio waves are what are propagating from the one device to the other. So if you are driving in your car, you're listening to this radio station today, you're tuned into a particular frequency, probably somewhere between 88 megahertz or 88 million cycles per second, and 108 megahertz. These wireless signals for 5G and beyond are operating at much, much higher frequencies, sometimes a factor of 1,000 higher, with wider bandwidths. And so I like to think of bands of radio spectrum like lanes on a highway that allow you to convey information in this case. And so for 5G, we have a number of bands that have been allocated for 5G services in the US. And, you know, as demand grows, we need to allocate more and more spectrum in order to support more and more users that are gobbling up more and more data and enabling more and more applications. So it's really the lifeblood, the physics and the lifeblood of these networks and the technologies around them.
Meng, when it comes to these the spectrum and these radio signals or frequencies, is that accurate?
Yes, indeed. A range of frequencies, just like this very FM radio station operates on a particular frequency.
So who ultimately owns these radio frequencies? Is it the government? Is it private entities?
Well, most of that is a national asset, and the FCC, Federal Communications Commission, is the U.S. federal government agency responsible for deciding the policy of allocation. Some of these frequency bands are unlicensed, so pretty much anyone can use it. Like most of our Wi-Fi spectrum are unlicensed frequency bands. But as Nick said, that we are trying to go to higher frequency bands, wider frequency bands. And there are some pretty sweet spot frequency bands that are in contention right now. Say the FAA-FCC disagreement on a particular frequency, right? So I think it would be very useful for this country, our country, to release as much and as fast as possible spectrum or frequencies so that we deploy 5G faster.
And that's interesting. So that's up to the federal government to release that.
In most cases, there are some rules and regulations on local conditions in how you share a particular licensed or unlicensed spectrum as well. But the vast majority of the spectrum we are looking at here are under the FCC agency's regulation.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll talk more about Indiana innovation and technology and 5G and all of that stuff. And I definitely want to touch upon the FAA-FCC disagreement that I think a lot of us heard about. If you have any questions or comments, you can reach out to us on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana, or you can leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. I'm Miriam Sobe. We'll be back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. We're speaking with Meng Chang, Executive Vice President of Purdue University and Dean of the College of Engineering, and Nick Lenneman, Director of Spectrum X, Co-Director of the Wireless Institute and Professor of Electrical Engineering at the University of Notre Dame, about 5G and technology and how Indiana fits into all of this. Now, whenever there's new technology, I'll tell you, I feel like somehow it's brought up in relation to air travel. I remember when smartphones were first coming out, there was this notion that you had to turn them off while in flight or there would be interference. And when I was a kid, yes, I'm going to go back here, I heard stories about Game Boys interfering, the Nintendo gaming device. And so I'm just curious, among what is it about air travel, airplanes, radio frequencies and all of that that's mixing up?
Well, Marianne, of course, we want to have safe air travel. At the same time, we also recognize there's actually a very good solution to this. Now, imagine that I bought a lot of land and my two-sided neighbors have not shown up yet. Do I get to build a swimming pool on their lot? Probably not, right? Now, if accidentally I did build a swimming pool outside of the boundary of my lot, when my neighbors do show up and want to build their house, I probably need to pay to tear down those pools so that they can have their legal rights within their lots. So it's a bit like that here, that some of the bands, the frequencies we're looking at in this FAA-FCC conversation, are not properly masked, which means that you bought a piece of property on the frequency band, and you need to make sure you have a filter so that the signals you transmit and receive do not spill over. Imagine what if the all-in program right now is spilling signals onto nearby other FM radio stations. Well, that shouldn't be allowed. Well, that's sort of...
I wouldn't mind that, actually.
You wouldn't mind? Well, no, maybe, Mariam, the other way around. Your sister station is spilling signal, and now we're listening to somebody else's program now because right. They did not put a filter in front of their transmitters. Well, in this case, they didn't put the right filters on some of those planes, and the nearby lots are now actually going to be used. In fact, it's not even nearby. They are guard bands away, many, many guard bands away. Plus, they're transmitting at often reduced signal power now. Still, we should put a better filter. Put better filter onto the planes so that you are essentially demolishing the swimming pool that you spilled over onto your far, far neighbor's land, because now they need to have the legal rights on the land that they purchased.
Yeah, I appreciate that analogy. I mean, that definitely makes sense. And what I was wondering also, though, is when we hear about air travel and technology interference, I don't know if it's necessarily misinformation that's being spread or if there's confusion, but there's just this overall feeling that somehow it's going to interfere. You're going to turn on your phone and something's going to happen on your flight.
It's a precaution. In many cases, you've got an older radio that's been, you know, designed and integrated into an aircraft or, you know, in some cases, there was a similar issue around potential interference with GPS receivers on John Deere tractors for smart agriculture some years ago. So the central issue is radio signal interference. In fact, that's why we have a Federal Communications Commission, because of back in the early days of radio, AM radio stations were trying to outpower one another and they were causing a lot of interference to one another. So we needed a national, or the solution at the time was to create a national agency that managed the radio spectrum and assigned frequencies to different applications. What we're experiencing in the last decade or so is that with the growth of 4G and now 5G, the telecom sector, the cellular sector in particular, is requiring a lot of radio frequencies, a lot of frequency bands, and they're willing to pay for it at auction. And so that's creating a lot of these neighboring issues, new versions of neighboring issues to which Meng alluded. So for context, the original neighbor of these so-called radar altimeters on aircraft, radar altimeters are used to measure height from the ground, distance from the ground, and they're very important for landing these aircraft. So obviously they're very important from a safety point of view. particularly in low visibility situations for the pilots. The previous neighbor was a satellite transmitter. So really far out at satellite orbit, very weak signals near the aircraft. By contrast, these cellular systems are on the ground. They're pointing up at the aircraft. They're much, relatively speaking, much stronger. And so just using Meng's analogy, it's like I had a nice piece of property with a great view, and all of a sudden I have a neighbor that builds a really tall building next door, and it affects my experience of the surrounding view of the landscape. And so that's it. There is a technology solution, which is to put a better filter on the radar altimeter receiver, except that's just a logistical nightmare to do, you know, when those radar altimeters are integrated into so many aircraft and there's different models. And so we don't exactly know how complicated the problem is. And so logistically, we needed to take some time, as I understand it, the FAA and the aviation industry asked for some time in order to slow down these rollouts to make sure that we could keep air travel as safe as possible.
And from what I understood from the things that I was reading about it, it seems like the U.S. is a little bit maybe behind with trying to navigate 5G with flights. Meng, is that accurate to say?
Yeah, well, you know, a lot of the reports already out there in the news that FCC experts cited how in many other countries deploying in the same or similar frequency bands, what they call C-band, you know, nerdy people like Nick and myself tend to give acronyms to a lot of things, and we give labels different bands, and this is the C-band. Deploying 5G signals in C-band has proven in those other countries not to have caused sufficient interference to have any safety concerns. Now, if FAA and the aviation industry would like to explore further, well, you know, I think it has come down to a simple question, and that is, how much would it cost to retrofit with better filters on these altimeter receivers? You know, again, I think that no one should be given the right to own more than what they bought for, right? You can't say, well, because I bought this piece of land, I really would rather have no neighbors too. At some point, neighbors going to show up. And if you accidentally spilled over their land, well, you need to pull that back. And let's be safe. Let's find out a solution. Technically, it's absolutely a very workable, viable solution. Well, it has to come down to how much would it cost and who's going to pay for that.
Can you ever run out of space on this spectrum?
Oh, yes. You know, it is of limited quantity. You know, you've got the beachfront property already mostly all spoken for, and you have to be creative and try to go to the higher frequency bands. That's why I mentioned earlier that one of the technological breakthroughs is edge compute. Another, I think, would be the ability to dynamically share infrastructure and to share spectrum. And not only sharing, but also creatively think about, do we need the spectrum all the time, everywhere? You know, I had a startup company early on that looked at the exact issue to say, even on a busy street in a busy hour, there are still certain flash moments where the spectrum is underutilized. So if you could preload, say, your Facebook download to those underutilized moments, then you are helping to fully utilize the spectrum. To say we run out of spectrum is one thing. That doesn't mean that there are certain better efficiency of fully utilizing the spectrum all the time that we can do. So between sharing and between utilizing these flash moments of underutilization, I think we still got some mileage left before we truly run out of spectrum.
Is there an app for that to tell you when's the most efficient time to be downloading stuff?
Well, I hate to do advertisements commercial during the all-in, but if you go to datami.com, datami.com, I'll stop the commercial here, but you get to see some interesting solutions.
Oh, cool. And Nick, when we're talking about the spectrum and sort of the radio frequencies, I don't know if this relates at all, but I was just thinking about some AM stations are kind of falling off, you know, maybe people aren't listening to radio as much. Does that help with technology in any way that want to use these radio frequencies? Are we going to see radio stations replaced?
The issue is really what applications might find that band, those particular frequencies, attractive. So, you know, there is a trend where a lot of media is moving over to the internet, and so it can be delivered using telecom like 5G type and beyond type infrastructure. We have seen this particularly in the TV bands, where there were fewer and fewer stations in general. When it was analog, it was switched over to a digital format, and so that we had a repacking of the TV band spectrum that enabled a nationwide auction for some more spectrum for, at the time, 4G in the so-called 600 megahertz band. And so that basically is, we're refarming spectrum from TV bands, TV applications to cellular. So really broadly speaking, what Meng was alluding to is a term that we use called spectrum efficiency, trying to make the most out of the spectrum that is currently allocated. There is a kind of a visionary aspect of going higher in frequency. Some people use the term spectrum frontiers. So going up into the millimeter wave spectrum, which are really, really high frequencies, typically above, I think the lowest frequency that we've seen for cellular is 24 gigahertz. So these are really, really high frequencies, and there are demonstration systems out there. There is a standard that part of the 5G standard is designed and operates in millimeter wave bands. Today, the challenge is that those technologies are very power hungry. So there's lots of spectrum available up there, but we need to evolve the technologies in order to make good use of that spectrum. And so that's actually a big effort around, you know, what's becoming called a push towards 6G. These days, into the millimeter wave frequencies and even into the terahertz frequencies, which is all very exciting, you know, for nerds like Meng and myself.
Well, I'm just thinking 6G, I can't get another new phone. I got to wait.
Yeah, take your time.
Don't worry. It's not coming to your store in the near future just yet.
And when it comes to sort of our state, when it comes to Indiana and innovation and tech, it seems that we're not often associated with tech, maybe outside of Indiana, maybe inside Indiana. We know what's going on. We see these innovations. What do you think is about our state that we're just kind of overlooked?
Well, you know, I'm wearing a hat as a technology innovation advisor to my wonderful home state of Indiana as well. And I think there is a wonderful convergence between where 5G or 6G is going and where our state's unique strength resides. And I would call that hard tech. You know, hard as not relative to easy, but hard as things that you can touch. Right? It's the bytes meeting the atoms somewhere. It's not just what you code, but also what you touch. Whether that is agricultural and life science and medical devices manufacturing, or it is transportation logistics or defense and aviations, or maybe semiconductors and 5G and 6G, any time where you have to put what you code, program in a software with what you can touch, a car, a drone, then the state of Indiana has some very unique strength in workforce, in entrepreneurship, and in attracting jobs and creating jobs and knowledge together in hard tech.
Nick, do you think there's a lack of folks in our state specialized in sort of these specific tech fields?
Well, I was going to push back a little bit on your comment. I mean, Purdue is one of the best engineering schools in the nation. It's a very sizable engineering school. The ECE department is also one of the top in the nation. They've got great experts in wireless. They're engaged in research and industry and government agency collaborations. Notre Dame also is, I think, for our size, I think we hit well above our weight class. We just We just took the leadership role in the National Center for Spectrum Innovation that was recently funded, which is, you referred to it in my intro as Director of Spectrum X. I think that we're on the rise in many ways because we have a lot of talent here. It's just a matter of harnessing all of that talent and going after some pretty big things together.
That's interesting because I think there's a thought out there. You know, I've heard some folks saying, well, we just need to attract more talent here. That's why we don't hear much about it. But to your point, it sounds like there is the talent. There's just the need to maybe better organize together.
Well, Maryam, I think to that point, I heard that Governor Holcomb and the Secretary of Commerce, Brett Chambers, organizing a global economic summit, and hard tech is going to be a key part of that, the Thursday and Friday before Indy 500. Thanks, Nick, for the call out to Purdue Engineering. And indeed, Notre Dame is a fantastic institution in football and in academics. So, you know, we have a lot here. But Maryam, I think, we need to attract even more companies and also create jobs along with knowledge. We do have talents. We want them to stay here with brain gain within our state. And B, I think we have some outstanding pillars of industry with customers that can attract companies and their vendors to come here. And I mentioned a few of those pillars. It's about concentrating a lot of our effort in a concerted way to make that happen. It is already happening. And I know that we can do even more in the month and years ahead.
Well, I want to thank you both for joining us. It's been a pleasure to speak with you this afternoon. Meng Chang, Executive Vice President of Purdue University and Dean of the College of Engineering, and Nick Lenneman, Director of Spectrum X, Co-Director of the Wireless Institute, and Professor of Electrical Engineering at the University of Notre Dame. Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Micah Yason. Scott Cameron is our Managing Editor. Adam Gross is our engineer and composed our theme song. If you'd like a podcast of this show or any past show, you can find it anywhere you get your podcasts. Find us on Twitter and Facebook at All In Indiana. I'm Miriam Soap. Thanks so much for listening. This is All In.